Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the DTFH. You know, I'm not going to leave you hanging, my dear loves. I'm sure a lot of other people out there would. I'm sure Mr. Beast isn't releasing anything regarding what's happening with the drones in New Jersey. But I love you, and it's the giving season. And today, I offer you this episode with ufologist and director James Fox. His newest documentary on the UFO phenomena is already number one on Apple Podcasts. But you're wondering what's going on in New Jersey, or if you're interested in some actual data regarding the uptick in UAPs, then you have come to the right place. James Fox has been in the field of exploring the UFO phenomena for around 30 years. His documentaries are incredible. They are an actual non-woo-woo-y deep dive into what appears to be a long-running government cover-up. They don't want us to know what's floating around out there, but James Fox is finding out. So strap in, get ready, stop staring up at the sky just for an hour and a half, and prepare to have your minds blown by James Fox. Also, you should follow him on X, James C. Fox on X, and for sure, download the program. It's on every streaming platform. Mr. Fox, welcome to the DTFH. It is an honor to meet you.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh my God. When I, you know, this New Jersey drone thing, the fact that it is not just coinciding with my podcast, but coinciding with the release of your newest documentary. Wow. How are you feeling right now about that?
I literally got a text from a United States Air Force colonel. He's retired, but he goes, he's got a great sense of humor. He goes, James, I just want to know your secret. How did you stage an alien invasion for in conjunction with the release of your latest film? I'm like, your timing could not have been better.
It couldn't have been better. I mean, it's
like unbelievable.
Unbelievable. But in that kind of synchronicity, I don't know how woo-woo you get about stuff. Because I know that one thing I love about your documentaries is you lean into science. And I love that. It's so easy to get lost in the weeds in this conversation and lose all credibility.
Yeah.
And end up interviewing the wrong person.
Yeah.
And you just lose credibility because you didn't research your guest enough.
Yeah. And I will lean into the woo-woo a little bit.
Oh, you got to.
Just a little bit.
But when, you know, this is a big synchronicity.
Yeah.
And
oh, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
I was like, this morning somebody sent me Leader Schumer right now at the podium getting hammered by the audience going, you don't know what it is. It's a UAP. Why don't you just call it what it is?
Yeah.
You're the one that wrote legislation. It's a UAP. He's like, we don't know what it is. He's like, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's like, this is happening right now.
Well, I think that's the launching off point, which is for over two decades, you've been investigating something that is clearly being covered up at every angle. What I love about the release of your documentary and what's happening is because we are now seeing pure gaslighting coming from our government. And not just like we can't talk about it, but saying maybe your eyes aren't seeing the right thing. You're seeing private planes. We don't know what this is. And that, to me, is the most insidious and really like it gives me the ick because the fact that they're being so brazen in their gaslighting in this regard implies a certain level of comfort and a view of us that is like we're like subhuman idiots that, you know, that they're inviting us, just don't look up. And if you see something, it's probably a private plane. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, people are seeing things that are freaking out their kids, freaking them out. I'd love your thoughts on this.
Okay, this is incredible. I'm going to go back in time a little bit because I remember covering this very issue back in the 90s, okay? It was March 13th, 1997. It's commonly known to as the Phoenix Lights case, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so I covered that case probably for the better part of 10 years, maybe even a little bit longer. On and off, I was going back and forth to Phoenix. And what the amazing thing was is that you had this massive craft that was sort of a boomerang shaped, and witnesses say anywhere between a mile to 2 miles from wingtip to wingtip, yeah, that went either very slowly or when it took off like warp speed, like Star Trek.
Yeah.
So everyone was out under the night sky to get a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet at the time. So it was witnessed by people all across the state of Arizona. And it wasn't 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
It was like 8 o'clock,
right.
6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m., 9 p.m. It floated all across the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
And the governor of, at the time, Fife Symington, saw it. Okay. But he didn't tell people that he saw it. Instead, he holds, I don't know what it was, a month after it happened, weeks, whatever, he holds an unscheduled press conference, and he has one of his aides dressed up in an alien suit. You guys probably remember this.
Yeah.
And he takes this guy out, and ha, 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 oh, you
yeah.
know, you guys, everyone needs to calm down,
yeah.
like whatever. Well, I was going around to all of his constituents, and they were pissed.
Sure.
Like, how dare you question our what we saw? Thousands of us saw it across the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
It was like spitting in their eye. Like, and I remember after like, I think it was like right around 10 years, I was revamping an old film I'd done called Out of the Blue. Because I'm never happy with a film when I finish it. I'm always like, never,
right.
What, you run out of money, you run out of steam.
Yeah.
I remember at one point my partner was in the fetal position. His wife is looking at me and like, you're killing my husband. You know, and he's, you know,
yeah.
And I've been there too. So in any case, I'm revamping Out of the Blue, and one of my key targets was Fife Symington because I'd never forgotten that incident 10 years ago where he basically was the same thing that's happening today was happening back then, right? What is that, 27 years ago?
Yeah.
So I was pissed, and so were his constituents. And so I put out I put out the feeler. I had like 10 people I wanted to get interviews with, and I got all, I think, 9 out of the 10. And Fife Symington, to my complete and utter amazement, agreed to meeting with me.
Wow.
You know, and I was driving it, and I remember him saying, well, you can either meet with me in Arizona, and at the time I was in Northern California, or I have a place in Santa Barbara. So I was like, I'll just get you as soon as I can possibly get you, because I know a lot of times people start to thinking, and then they go, oh, you know what, in actuality, I'm not going to meet with you. I've had that happen a lot of times. So he goes, well, I'm in Santa Barbara right now. I said, I'm getting in the car, I'm coming.
Wow.
I'll be there tomorrow.
Cool.
So I drive down, and I'm on the way down here, and the relevance of this story will come clear in a second. And I get about halfway down. I think I was taking Highway 101, somewhat scenic. Well, not one, but 101. And I was like, you know, I can't think of anybody better to ask him a question than one of his former constituents and witness to the event. So I call my friend Stacy Rhodes, and she was an amazing witness. I said, Stacy, you're not going to believe who I'm going to meet with right now. And it had been almost 10 years since the incident. And I said, I'm going to meet with Fife Symington. She's like, oh, gosh, I said, is there anything you'd like to say to him? She goes, you're damn right I have something I'd like to say. And it had been 10 years, but they were so insulted.
Yeah.
I mean, these witnesses had literally stopped their car on the freeway and like got out and, you know, I mean, they were apparently on both sides of the freeway. And this object, it was between like, it was between Phoenix and Tucson. It was on Interstate 10. And I'm told that there were people stopped on the side of the road people driving, people stopped, and this object just floated over the top of them, and it took minutes. And Stacy Rhodes in particular said, if I had a newspaper and opened it up like that, I could not have blocked out the object. That's how big it was above their head, her and her daughter, Emily, and they had one other person in the car. Anyway, so very good sighting, very good case. And so I grabbed my little pocket tape recorder, and I recorded a statement from her that I was going to hit Fife with when the time was right, during the interview. So I thought, well, let me not do this. When I met with him the following day, I couldn't believe I was getting an interview with Fife Symington. And I said, let me get as much of the interview as I can before I get into this case. So about three quarters of the way through the interview, where I'm feeling pretty comfortable, I said, hey, I got a little something I'd like to play for you.
Yeah.
And so, and he goes, well, what is that? I said, it's a recording from one of your constituents and a witness to the event. Hit the play button. Hi, this is Stacy Rhodes. You know, opportunity to address this. Do you still feel like this is a matter for ridicule and this, that, and the other thing when you let us out to dry and we all these thousands of witnesses across the state and you make this mockery and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, and I see him sinking down in his chair a little bit. And I didn't know how it was going to go. And then he stops and he pauses. He says, you know what? Yeah, if I could do it differently now, I would have.
Huh.
He goes, I saw that thing too. And that thing clearly was not of this earth.
Wow.
And I'm a former captain in the Air Force. I'm a pilot. He goes, that thing was not of this earth. And I said, well, how do you so sure about that? He goes, the size. He said it was like a mile across. And it was just floating really slowly.
Yeah.
So this has been the party line for decades.
Yeah.
Right? And that policy was sort of adopted after the White House and Capitol was buzzed on two consecutive weekends in July of 1952.
Right.
When they had, it was a problem, right?
Right.
So they brought in that panel, I think it was the Robertson panel, and they basically like, how do we deal with this, the Air Force? And the Robertson panel, I think it was part of the CIA. They're all just adopt the policy of ridicule. And it was very effective campaign, right?
But why? Well, why? What's the reason for gaslighting? What's the reason?
I think it's, it's not really working as much these days because people are starting to realize this is bullshit. Because I had a general explain to me one time, and he looked at me almost like I was this naive young guy. This is, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I was always thinking like, oh, isn't it amazing? You know, we're not alone in the universe and we have definitive proof and what a kumbaya moment and get together and do a group hug and yay, you know. And he starts chuckling and he said, you just have no idea how the military looks at this problem. And I said, well, show me. What do you mean? He goes, You guys put us in charge of protecting our airspace, right? That's our job. And we're not really the types of folks that want to come forward and say, my fellow Americans, it's been brought to our attention that there are structured craft of unknown origin whizzing around with impunity.
Right.
They fly rings around our fastest jets.
Right.
We don't know who they are, where they come from, or what they want. And shall they turn to be hostile, we also have no visible means of defense against them.
Right.
Thank you and good night. He goes, absolutely not. We don't do that.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of the reasons why they're calling it drones today. I mean, maybe they are, but they're calling it drones because I think UAP is a little scary. They think that we're children. We can't handle the truth.
That's right.
And so they're going to try, like, you know, downplay it, tell us that they have no idea where they're coming from, yet there's nothing to worry about.
Right.
So it's like, how can you say what something isn't when you don't know what it is?
Right. So, well, you know, that way in the New Jersey stuff that's happening.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And
it's spreading more places now.
It's all over the place. But I'm, you know, leaning more into some kind of experimental drone to get ready for potential World War III. And that, obviously, I don't think that discounts any of the other things happening simultaneously. But what it, to me, emphasizes is what you're talking about. If you are skeptical that our government, if somehow you're still skeptical that our government is covering some incredible thing up that would probably transform the way we look at everything, you shouldn't be anymore. Watch Mayorkas. Watch any of these people as they basically tell you to question your own mind. That, to me, is so dark. That, you know, if you unravel that, you realize, oh, obviously, if they're doing this about something that people are filming seeing, news reporters
yeah,
are seeing.
Yeah, you're not seeing what you're seeing.
Right. If they're doing that about that, then they're doing that about everything.
Do you remember Jaws?
Yeah.
You remember the movie where the public statements they're making, everything's fine.
There you go.
just like,
it's Jaws.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny. I did a film on the BP oil spill called Pretty Slick. And I spent several years going back and forth to the Gulf. I flew over Ground Zero with the ocean on fire. And I was in a seaplane with a marine biologist by the name of Dr. Carl Safina, an amazing guy. And they were doing something they'd never done before. And they were doing subsea injection with Corexit. So they're pumping the ocean full of Corexit.
Oh, yeah, I remember
5,000 feet down.
Yeah.
So they're trying to prevent the oil from coming to the surface because they're getting fined for every barrel.
Right.
So they're doing everything they can. They're hitting the slicks at night with Corexit. They're pumping it down 5,000 feet. So there's these massive plumes of underwater oil mixed all up with this Corexit. Never done big lab tests. And kids are crying on the beaches when they're, you know, you don't know where it is or how bad, you know. And I'm having the water tested. And it's not super bad with a private lab at the time. But there were really dangerous levels coming back of toxic water with oil and Corexit. And not everywhere, but anywhere, right? You never know where it was.
Right.
And they were like, beaches are safe. Everything's fine. Come on down. And I'm thinking to myself, they're putting the health and safety of the public ahead of the multi-billion dollar tourist based economy.
Yeah, that's right.
And I saw it firsthand.
Yes, that's it.
And that's what they do. And they think that we can't handle the truth or something, like, oh, you know, we're, and hey, you know what? Even if it's a little scary, it's still reality.
Well,
time to treat us like adults.
All right, this to me, like, it, you know, and
you know what I mean?
I love what you do because you just try to deal with what we know. And so what we know for sure is there's a cover up right now with
question.
The New Jersey. Okay,
no question.
So
they're covering something up.
Then the explanation for the cover up, where they don't want to cause panic, implies a benevolence. It implies that they give a shit about us, that actually they're like, oh, we don't want to panic people. That would be bad. Let's push that explanation off the table.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other explanations for the cover-up? Because I think that's where it gets really worrisome and fascinating. And I've heard some, and I would love to hear your thoughts on these. One, they've already made contact. There's some kind of treaty, some kind of deal or something where they are in some weird way collaborating with whatever this is. That's one explanation. Two, the other explanation would be it's not that they're worried about causing panic, but they feel that the revelation of what these things are opens people up to some kind of actual danger. I'm just saying there's a lot of other possible explanations that aren't because they don't want us to freak out.
Yeah.
Because there's so many other things that they show us that do make us freak out.
Yeah.
I don't think the freak out explanation is the right one. I think there's some other thing.
Well, you know, another thing to consider, did you watch the program yet?
No, I haven't watched it.
Okay, so I include a rather controversial encounter in the film. And I know that I'm going to get some flack, particularly from mainstream. But I justify it in the film by saying, look, you know, don't take it from me. Close encounters of the third kind, that's when people report beings connected to the craft, right?
Right.
Those are, you know, aliens or beings or creatures or whatever you want to call them. That is one of the aspects of the phenomenon that the Air Force went out of their way to try to tamp down, right? Because it's one thing when you have an unknown object in the sky.
Right.
It's another thing entirely when you got beings on the ground.
Yeah.
But I included a rather controversial case in the program because I think there might be an element of, well, okay. So one of the things that I've learned over and over and over is as outlandish as it may appear initially.
Yeah.
A case, a sighting, a crash. I've learned to suspend judgment because time and time again, I've always been like, that's impossible. That's so outlandish. There's no way that's true. Now I've gotten to the point after 30 years where I go, you know what, James? Stop. Just look at the evidence, review the data, and think about the likelihood of whether this happened or not. Because the phenomenon is so complex and so profound and all over the place, right? Imagine if they admitted what they know, okay?
Yeah.
So that would expose their vulnerabilities because there's so many things that they evidently don't know,
right?
So it's like you admit, and again, I'm just going to informed speculation
here,
right? Informed speculation. I'm not stating any of this is fact.
Okay.
But I've met with some people that I respect that are certainly in a position to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And they've told me they're walking among us. And I've said, I said, come on, what are you talking about walking among us, you know? And they go, I mean exactly that. They're walking among us. In fact, Bob Bigelow told me that.
Right.
And I did not believe him. I wouldn't say I believe him.
Yeah.
But it certainly got me thinking a little bit. And so then I thought, well, so let's see. If this case happened in 1994 that I cover in the program, and it was at a Nellis test range, that's a military installation, would that mean that there was an incursion or was there cooperation? Or what is that? What does that mean?
Yeah.
It's just like the depths of the phenomenon has no ends. Like, I don't know where, you know, what I can say definitively is that they know the phenomenon's real. They know it's under intelligent control. They know that the technology exhibited is light years advanced from anything that we have. And I've talked to a lot of people. Some people say we have ARVs. I have not seen that evidence. I'm not saying it's not true.
Right.
But I haven't seen enough to make me say I believe that. Right now, I don't believe that. I know we have the technology. I feel very confident about that.
Yeah.
From a couple of the crash cases that I have investigated.
Yeah.
Roswell and more recently, Virginia.
Virginia. Yeah.
Virginia is nuts.
Holy shit.
I know.
We got to get into Virginia.
Yes. And when I came back from Virginia the last time and I was finally putting the movie together, CNN was at my house doing a special with Leslie Kane. And they were like, oh my God, we're so excited. You just came back from Brazil. Let's talk about the, you know. And I said, no, actually, I'm not talking about any of that. Because if I do, you're going to tell me to up the dosage of the medication that I'm not on. Let me just put the film out and then we can talk.
Okay.
Sorry.
But before we get into Virginia, which actually does apply to what you're saying.
And it does apply to the program too.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about the walking among us theory.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I can tell you a couple of other things too, yes.
Well, it is an interesting thing that some people who don't reject it just out of habit, because I think a lot of people, they don't care if it's an Air Force pilot. They don't care if it's whistleblowers with great credibility saying this stuff. They've been so programmed by people like that. What's his name? Great name, by the way. The guy you interviewed.
Len Val Logan? Or no. Hal Putoff?
No, the Phoenix Lights.
Oh, yeah. Fife Symington.
Fife. People like Fife, whether they know it or not, have engaged in a long-term program of getting people to just naturally reject anything that doesn't fit into the paradigm that the federal government is offering us regarding what's happening in the skies. So, but the people who aren't in that category and accept, okay, there's something happening. It seems intelligent. It's been going on for a long time. For some reason, they don't make the connection that, okay, if it's an intelligent craft, a drone, whatever it may be, why do you think they would stop in the sky? If I was observing, researching, or even trying to influence a civilization, then I wouldn't stop in the sky. I obviously would find a way to infiltrate power structures to figure them out. And so logically, if we're, and again, a lot of assumptions here, I'm going to assume this is an advanced intelligence base, relative to ours. And maybe it's too much assuming to imagine that they're like us in any way. But clearly there's some curiosity there.
No question.
They're curious. There's a curiosity, and also there's decorum happening.
And they want to be seen.
And they want to be seen.
But they don't want to overtly make their presence unequivocally known.
Right.
So they're a little in on it as well.
That's right. That's, and you know, again, pure speculation.
Pure
here.
Speculation, but that's pretty solid.
Pretty solid.
I could back it up with some pretty good cases.
And at that point, that's where we get into Weirdville, because at that point, now you have to start asking yourself, and I think it's, and I don't know if this is a good practice, but if you zoom back and look at all of what's happening right now, technologically, on the planet, if you look at it holistically, including this uptick, this insane uptick in UAPs, then you have to ask yourself, how much of the technology that we are currently using AI, for example, the new Willow quantum chip from Google. How, if they're walking among us, how much of what we're discovering and figuring out how to do is an actual human innovation, and how much of it has been in some way influenced by these beings for whatever reason they might have for doing that? Do you ever follow, do you ever go down that rabbit hole?
Yeah. So I interviewed a guy named Philip Corso back in the 90s. He was at the 50th anniversary of Roswell. He was one of the highest level at the time military officials that came forward and said, I saw the bodies. I handled some of the debris at the Pentagon in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
It was infiltrated into these government subcontractors, Boeing and Lockheed and whatever, is what he was saying at the time. But I don't know if people were quite ready, but maybe some people were. But I guess I'd say I believed him, I guess, because if we did have it, but he said unknowingly that they were seeding these companies with some little bits of the technology, right?
Yeah.
Though there was that. And then I wanted to get back to them walking among us, because this is really crazy. And it's a story that I have in the back of my mind. I've never reported on it, although I've talked a little bit about it. And I think about it often. And I hope something uncovers, I hope it uncovers itself at some point. But I was investigating a case when I was doing the phenomenon that happened in 1964 in Socorro, New Mexico. And it's considered to be one of the most well-documented close encounters of the third kind in U.S. history.
Yeah.
It was one of the cases that turned Dr. Jalen Hynek did a 180 on, because it was very, very compelling. It was a police officer by the name of Lonnie Zamora. And so I went to the town of Socorro over a five-year period. I got to know his wife, his co-workers, his kids. I went to the National Archives. I befriended one of the guys that wrote the book on the case. And I was really sticking my teeth into this close encounter of the third kind, where there are entities witnessed at the scene, lots of physical evidence at the ground. I mean, it's a great case. Anyway.
What physical evidence?
Imprints, burn marks in the bushes, footprints from the creatures, landing gear imprints. Other people saw the craft in the air, in and around the area.
So like enough physical evidence that
something happened.
No one hoaxed that.
No.
It was like, if you want the amount of energy it would take.
The Air Force tried for 10, 15 years to give it a prosaic explanation, and they couldn't. So it was a very good case. But anyway, in the process of investigating that case, I came upon an alleged landing that was filmed by the Air Force or the military at White Sands. Now, White Sands, right around the same time, is just a stone's throw from Socorro.
Yeah.
And it's commonly referred to as the Holloman UFO landing case. I think it's circa 1964.
Okay.
May, June. I don't have the exact month. But I investigated that case. It was kind of a tangent that I went off on, but I was thinking, how you got a landing, evidently a landing at Holloman Air Force Base in 1964 that was filmed. And the disc comes down, and the door opens, and out come some aliens, and they meet with base commanders, and off they go. Now, if that's true, that means we've had contact and communication with a non-human intelligence dating back, what, 50, 60 years ago, okay?
At least.
And we have that photographic proof or videotape evidence. So I started kind of investigating that quietly, but I didn't really want it to be publicly known, because it's so crazy, like, a landing and filmed. And I thought, well, James, just, again, suspend judgment. Let's keep digging a little bit here.
Yeah.
Because I believed Socorro had happened. Well, why not have a camera?
Sure.
Right? So I started looking into it more. It led me eventually to two guys that made a documentary called UFOs Past, Present, or Future, Alan Sandler and Bob Emenegger. Bob Emenegger just passed, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, but I did do an extensive two-hour interview with him. I also met with Alan Sandler. And at the time of production in the early 70s, these guys had unprecedented, for whatever reason, access to all these military bases. And they just, like, given carte blanche to make this documentary.
Yeah.
And in the documentary, they refer to the Holloman landing case as maybe an event that might have already happened, or maybe it's going to happen in the near future.
Huh.
That's how they propose it. But they had, again, unprecedented access to all these military. All these military people that were involved with Project Blue Book are all participating in the film. So I was like,
why? Wait, why were they participating? Like, if the idea is they're covering it up,
testing the waters on disclosure, I don't know.
Ah, right.
I don't know. So anyway, so I long story short, man, I could go on all night on this one, but I basically got in touch with both Emenegger, I got in touch with Alan Sandler, I met with them both multiple times, And Alan told me that he saw that footage. I said, well, wait a minute. What footage are you talking about? He goes, the landing footage at Holloman. I said, whoa. You saw the footage of the flying saucer coming down and the aliens getting out and interacting with the base commanders. What? Yes, he says, I saw that footage. I said, okay. Well, now, when I want...
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
When I want to really like burn, etch my memory with a specific case or incident, I usually close my eyes and I allow the witness to use his words, his or her words, to recreate the visuals in my head.
Yeah.
So I can really get it, right? Like, yeah. I want to see it. I want to be there.
Yeah.
So I asked Alan, I was like, I want you to give me every detail. Was it daylight? Was it this? Was the camera on tripod? Was it, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, and so basically what he described was a, and there are a lot of people that wrote articles about it in and around the time that it happened. There were witnesses on the base, both military, civilian, pilots that saw it from the air, people saw it from the ground.
Yeah.
All sorts of articles around the time that it happened were written by a woman named Coral Lorenzen at the UFO Bulletin. But anyway, he says that there were three discs coming in. It was, I think it was early afternoon, three discs coming in over the base that were followed by military jets.
Huh.
And then as it got over the base, the two of the discs peeled away, and there was one that kind of wobbled like a leaf down to the ground. And Alan said it looked like, to me, it was in trouble because it wasn't like doing very well. But evidently, that's kind of how those discs fly. They kind of wobble like they're unstable. And he goes, plunk, it lands right on the base. And he goes, you know, James, he goes, just like in the sci-fi movies, it's like the seamless door opened and out came two, I guess for the better part, it was aliens. And then the third one came out, and a little different. It had a big headgear, almost like Egyptian or something.
Huh.
Vertical slits for eyes, big nose, very small chin, small mouth. And they had a, according to Alan, who saw the footage, they had a, this individual had a device that looked almost like a microphone or something, but it was, he assumed it was a communication device, but he wasn't sure. And then the base commanders met with them out, and then they this one individual, alien or whatever, got in the Jeep, and they drove off to, I don't know, a bunker, whatever the hell they
front
went
front seat
to.
Or back seat of the Jeep.
I know. I didn't get
seat
that detail.
Belt.
I know.
Seatbelt. What do you do?
But anyway, I know. So I've been quietly and discreetly looking into this, and based on my belief that's leaning more in the direction that it happened than it did it didn't happen. I'm talking to all sorts of intel folks these days off the record that tell me they do believe it happened, and they think they know where that footage is. And Arrow's currently looking for the footage. I know that they've heard about it. But based on that, I decided to leave the 1994 Jason Sands. And again, you haven't seen the film yet. His description of a face-to-face encounter at a military base with, if it's true, an alien. And, you know, and I know that it's a slippery slope and it's a tall order to get people, like, I just want to say, in my own defense, that it's difficult to get more information on something, on a particular case, without reporting on it first. So right. I'm reporting on it. I'm not stating it as fact, but I'm saying I believe that this might just have happened.
Wow.
And so, you know, again, it's like going down that wormhole of like, where does it stop? Where does the crazy end, right?
But, you know, but the thing is, once you buy in to we have unknown craft.
Yes, no question.
Intelligently controlled deal, by non-human entities.
Yeah.
Why would they stop in the sky? And to me, if you're going to accept that part, you've got to kind of accept the other part. And it really isn't that weird. And that, I think—
somebody's piloting them.
And this answers what we were initially talking about. Because here's this: what's interesting in the idea that the government's covering all this stuff up for, they don't want us to know that they don't control the skies or technology or whatever, is it makes the aliens kind of this innocent party in the situation. But the moment that there is some communication participation happening, it gets a little sinister because it would imply that these beings are instructing the governments of the world to not reveal certain bits of information. And that kind of conspiracy between an off-world intelligence and the leaders of the world is pretty terrifying.
So I've gotten to the point now where I feel pretty comfortable saying that whoever they are, they clearly are in on the secrecy because all they'd have to do is hover over the Macy's Day Parade and it's game over, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So they do some pretty brazen things. I mean, you know, if you look into the Phoenix Lights case in 97, that's pretty brazen. I mean, it was, you know, early enough. Oh, yeah, they just flew right over, just a whole parade of them.
Yeah.
So that was pretty a big deal. I mean, that happened today, there'd be a lot of footage.
Right.
Not 2006 or 2005 or 2006 at O'Hare Airport. Are you guys familiar with that case? A disc that over Terminal 17 at United
Airlines?
Yes,
but please re-describe. I remember when that happened. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Pretty brazen.
Pretty brazen.
Had a disc that was hovering over Terminal 17, United Airlines.
Right.
And for quite some time in broad daylight, it was witnessed by a lot of United Airlines workers, people on the ground, pilots, people took. I'm told that at least one photograph of it was taken. Don't know what happened to that. It disappeared. But pretty brazen. And then when the object took off vertically and it punched a donut hole in the cloud on the way out. All the witnesses described it.
Wow.
Pretty crazy case. I mean, it's hovering over O'Hare Airport. 2005? Was that 2005 or 2006? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, but
I remember it.
Great case. In fact, I was investigating that case. What year was that? I was investigating that case in 2008. And I had a whole camera crew with me, and I was interviewing folks in Arizona doing some updates on the massive flyover from 1997, which was about 11 years after the incident. And I was going to fly from there to O'Hare Airport and try to get a couple of people to go on the record or go anonymously, come forward, employees from United Airlines. And then a massive, massive UFO incident happened in Stephenville, Texas in late 2008. And I diverted my efforts from going to O'Hare, so I never really got boots on the ground there. And I went to Texas and covered that case instead.
Okay, now
you remember that case in Stephenville?
No, what was that case?
Oh my God, they said you could have landed an airplane on it. The object was so huge.
Okay, I have to ask you, you know, you have a very bizarre job.
Yeah.
And you have to live in the fringes of things. Like even, you know, telling people what you do is probably either going to be met by people like me who are like, hello, or it's going to be met by people who are like, all right,
I've been dealing with that my whole life, and it's fine. You know, I get laughed at and ridiculed.
But
a lot less so these days, but yeah.
Yeah, right. And that's got to feel good. But I'm wondering, like, you know, just doing this podcast where I get to interview people like you, and people have very interesting stories or spiritual outlooks on the world. From time to time, I feel a little wobbled, you know, like I like to think of myself as someone who's like open and open to the unknown and stuff. But every once in a while, it's too much unknown. Mm-hmm. And you realize how attached you are to default reality in ways you didn't think you were. Do you experience that in your own life?
Oh my gosh, just in the last, probably the making of the, okay. So I did, for the first time, I've been doing documentaries on UFOs for 30 years.
Yeah.
So I did a film called The Phenomenon, And The Phenomenon was the first documentary, and it was probably, I did 50 Years of Denial, then I did Out of the Blue version one, Out of the Blue director's cut, then I did I Know What I Saw. So that was like 3.5 films, yeah, basically. And I'd never touched on Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I'd heard about them,
right,
but I just was a little bit of a slippery slope. I was like, sure, I'm going to step back on that one a little bit. Well, I went all in on The Phenomenon. Did you ever watch The Phenomenon?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
So The Phenomenon's got Intel folks. It's got former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid.
Yeah.
Got Podesta. Got Republicans, Democrats. Amazing. But, excuse me, I cover Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And I cover, an event that occurred in 1994 at a school called Ariel School in Rua, Zimbabwe.
Oh, yeah.
Africa.
Yes, yes.
And it was roughly 100 school children. People think there's like 66. There was more. I was there. It was more like 100 school children that were out on the field when this object came in. In and around the area of Zimbabwe, Harare, at the time,
yeah,
South Africa, there were UFO reports, sightings by adults, by all sorts of people in and around the area. But this object or objects chose a school to land in broad daylight. It was on morning recess, and it was like 10 o'clock in the morning, and all the kids were out there playing. Yeah. And a number of discs came down out of the sky, landed, got out, and these little creatures interacted telepathically with the kids. Now, I opted to report on this case, and I really did somewhat of a deep dive, considering I probably only spent maybe 12 to 15 minutes max in the film, maybe 12. That was the first time I'd ever kind of gone all in on reporting on something. And I remember a couple years when I started to dig my teeth into that case, and I had this investor, and he goes, "Man, you mean to tell me there's fucking aliens landed at a school, in the aerial school? Are you kidding me? I'm not wasting a dime on that bullshit." I said, "Larry, hold on a second. I understand that knee-jerk reaction. I had it too. Just please look at this. Look at Dr. John Mack from Harvard. Look, he's on the ground talking to the kids. Like, please just listen. Yeah. I was just trying to get him to listen to it."
Yeah.
And then I got him on board. I said, "Just give me 5 minutes." And I showed him some of the testimony from the kids right after it happened that was taken.
Yeah.
Interviews taken by Dr. John Mack, who's a Harvard psychiatrist. Very impressive stuff, right?
Yeah.
So he was like, "Ooh, God, maybe let me rethink this." Anyway, I reported on it. Okay. And I was terrified at the time because I had just interviewed Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and he wanted to see the whole movie before it was going to be released for obvious reasons.
Wow.
Who he is. I'm like, he's going to look at that case at the end with the aliens talking to the kids and he's going to say, "You need to cut me out of that movie." I was like, "Oh my God, I'm so worried about it." But I reported on it anyway. And not only did he not ask to be removed from the film, he actually publicly endorsed it.
Wow.
That was amazing. So then I went from there. And now I'm covering an alleged UFO crash, Moment of Contact. Now, this case that happened in 1996 in Varginha, Brazil, is dealing with a UFO that was in distress, that a number of people witnessed it crash. One guy in particular witnessed it crash, but another people saw the UFO before it crashed. And then 2 days or a day or 2 days later, just a few miles away in the town of Varginha, Brazil, people are reporting these strange creatures in broad daylight.
Yeah.
It's an amazing case, and these creatures are captured. They're taken in alive.
Can you describe the creatures and describe the UFO sighting?
Yes. So the UFO was January 20th, 1996, and the UFO was described as a cigar-shaped object, metallic, with no visible means of propulsion, no wings, no just totally unusual cylindrical shape.
Well, metallic?
Like a stainless steel or like a metallic, like a tinfoil kind of color.
Okay.
And this guy named Carlos de Sousa actually went to the crash site after we took him there after 20-something years. And then people started seeing these strange creatures. The local military police were involved. The doctors from Humanitas Hospital were involved because the creatures were taken to the hospital. They were captured in the streets. I mean, it's a crazy story.
What did the creatures look like?
They were brown. They had big red eyes. You could look up Varginha
Can you
aliens.
Grab that, Josh?
Yeah. And they had big red eyes, brown skin, bigger heads, slits for mouths, and spindly, weak, feeble bodies. An oily brown skin, like oily, no hair.
Take it easy. They weren't that. Why are you bullying these poor?
That's it right there. So that's on the far left. That's Katya Sorry, you can click on that one right there. Yeah. So you'll see. Oh, this is my buddy Michael Schellenberger. Yeah, he wrote that. Anyway, that's the guy that saw the UFO crash. That's the creature.
That is red eyes. They're drunk. It's hammered.
And
horns, like little horn.
Yeah, weird little protuberance. Yeah, I know. But anyway, my point is, it's like, so I'm now, so I go from reporting only on the craft for the first, 20 plus years of my career. And then I was off, screw it, and I reported on alleged close encounters of the third kind, which is a slippery slope, let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
And then now I'm reporting on a UFO crash and live aliens walking through the town of Virginia, right?
Yeah.
And I tell people, it's like, as soon as I start talking about it, they look at me, I lose them. And I had my next door neighbor who runs Make-A-Wish Foundation, this guy, Jamie, a big supporter of mine. He's good friends with the guy, Brian Benner, who wrote for Political Magazine. And he goes, James, I love you, brother. I respect you, but you lost me on this one. I'm sorry. And I was like, hey, I don't blame you. I understand. So now, then I can do the crash retrieval case, right, that the Americans are involved with. The Americans came in and swooped up the debris.
Bill Clinton's president.
Bill Clinton was president, yep. And I've been tracking that down, that flight down, the United States Air Force flight that came in and landed in Campinas. So I'm investigating that now. So then I go from that to asking sitting members of Congress, do we have aliens and flying UFOs, flying saucers in our possession?
Right.
Never in 100 million years did I ever think I'd be asking a sitting member of Congress from both parties,
right,
do we have aliens, and not be laughed out of the room or blocked from D.C. altogether. Instead, it's like one of them was like, yes. The other one's like, you know, due to my security clearances, I can't answer. I got to steer away from that.
Yeah.
But I encourage your ongoing investigations and keep pushing us for transparency and blah, blah, blah. That's happening right now.
Yep, that's happening.
And then 3 months after Moment of Contact comes out, I went on Rogan in April of 2023 talking about Moment of Contact. And I'm sure that Joe Rogan, just like everybody else, myself included, when he first heard about that, he was like, oh, bullshit. Like, there's no way. It's impossible.
Yeah.
But then you listen to the testimony from people on the ground, and including the mayor, like all these people in the town, it's very impressive. And then that was April 2023 that Rogan reported on it. And in July of 2023, the highest level intelligence officer, David Grush, testifies under oath to a joint group of bipartisan lawmakers that we have definitive evidence that we're not alone.
Did they call it? Non-human biologics or something?
Non-human intelligence and biologics.
Biologics.
Never heard of
Sounds
biologics.
Sounds like a skin cream. Why do they talk like this? That's the other thing. Is like even the when they are disclosing,
it's so technical.
It's so
biologics.
Biologics. You got alien meat. That's what it is. Now
it's this. You know.
Would you say that
I would have never seen that. I would have never seen that coming.
None of us would have seen any of this coming.
And I had people at the time telling me, James, you just came off the phenomenon. One of the first times that a documentary on the topic has such high level cooperation from intel, from Congress people, senators, you really pushed the envelope with the close encounters of the third kind, and now you want to report on live aliens walking through the town of Virginia. You're going to tarnish your reputation. You're going to jeopardize all your efforts.
Yeah.
Do you really want to do this?
I don't think people in New Jersey are going to say that.
Yeah.
Because this is what's interesting to me is, you know, you see an echo.
We're pushing the envelope a little further every time. That's what I meant to say.
I love it. And but again, I just think it's worth noting. I know we already mentioned it earlier. Why, if you are okay admitting that there's whatever you want to call them, UAPs, whatever, why then is it even considered like out of, like you can't say that they have bodies, that they're walking around, that's too much, man. If they're here, they're here. And so, okay, to go back a little bit though.
So my brain's been exploding for the last couple of years just because you asked me earlier, do you ever have that moment?
Yes,
I've been having that moment.
But this actually, okay, I'm going to skip what I was going to ask. This is another question I have for you. So obviously we have precedent throughout U.S. history for whistleblowers being threatened, murdered, suicided, etc. And what I've heard, whatever you want to call it, the deep state or whatever group or small group of people is behind covering this stuff up. They also, I think Grush was threatened. I think Grush had some stuff go down.
Yeah.
So have you experienced anything like that? And are you worried that if you finally break through, if you get close enough, that you could be in danger?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm public enough at this point where I feel a little more comfortable, right?
Right.
I've been spooked a couple of times over the years. I could go into those cases if you want, but
I would love to hear that. Yeah. Like, you don't have to. I mean, I don't want to waste too much of your time. I want to get into Virginia more, but I would love to hear about like that.
Yeah. So I had a whole crew with me at the time, and there was a mass sighting. When I say a mass sighting, like the town of Stephenville in Dublin, Texas. 2008 was the end of 2008 or was early 2009, but might have been both. Sometimes they span over several weeks or a month. And there was one particular witness, Ricky Sorrells. He was a deer hunter, and the whole town saw something. The local police department were coming, there were people coming forward. They had a whole town hall meeting and press conference, and it was in the news, and Larry King Live covered it. I mean, it was kind of a big deal, but there was one particular person that I'd heard about that a lot of people saw it at a distance. There were some military jets chasing this thing, and it was apparently huge.
Yeah. I mean,
just colossal, like similar in size to the one that was over Phoenix, Arizona, Jesus. Where it's like a mile across, 2 miles across, some of the witnesses described, including the governor. So there was a guy named Ricky Sorrells, big, tough guy, super sweetheart, and he was deer hunting, and he said he was looking down, going through the forest with his rifle, and he had a scope on it. And he goes, James, you know, we have these, like, dry leaves from the oak trees, and if I step on the dry leaves, that could make a sound and scare the deer. So I was looking down as I was navigating my way through the forest, and it was, like, dusk. And as I was going hunting, and all of a sudden he goes, I don't know, I just felt compelled to look up. And so he stopped in the forest, and I went to the exact location. I filmed with him for a film I did called I Know What I Saw. And he goes, I looked up, and there above me was a craft so big, he goes, I couldn't see the edge in any direction.
Wow.
And so he goes, I'm a metal worker, man. I know metals.
Yeah.
So I picked up my rifle, and I looked through the scope.
What?
Yeah. And he was looking through the scope, and he said he was examining the metal of this thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he shot it.
Well, so he's looking at it. And he's going, God, there's no welds, there's no rivets, it's seamless. There are these inverted recessed cone type things in the belly of this thing. And he goes, James, you could have landed an airplane on this. He goes, you know, I was just kind of curious. I was going to, fire my gun at it. He goes, I was just curious if it was going to ricochet off or like would it absorb the bullet. And he had his finger on the trigger and he's looking through the scope and he's about to pull it. And he goes, maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Yeah.
So he decides... No, I'm not going to shoot at it. So he puts the gun down.
I would have thought the same thing, though.
Puts the gun down, but he almost did.
Thank you, God.
So anyway, so I'm trying to get this story on camera, but he's like, hell no, I'm not going on camera. He goes, he told me the whole story, but he goes, I'm absolutely not going on camera. The local military base is harassing me. They're coming by at night, and they're flying their helicopters over my house and lighting me up. He goes, I'm running outside in my underwear with my shotgun, and they're lighting me up like daylight.
Yeah.
So he called the local base and he goes, and this is all happening right around the time when I was out there trying to get an interview with him. I was going to his house and he was off the beaten path. And he tells the base, he goes, stop flying over my house. And they said, that's our airspace. That's our airspace. We'll do what the hell we want in our airspace. I suggest you stop talking about what you saw.
Fuck.
This was serious. This was happening.
Yeah.
You look at Ricky Sorrells. He's a big, strong Texan man.
Yeah.
Nope. With Ricky Sorrells, right?
Right.
And he was frightened. And we were out there, and I was trying to get him to talk to me, and all of a sudden a delivery truck, like randomly, pulls in. We're all like, the whole production team was like, the hell is this guy? You don't just accidentally go on his road and drive down. Some delivery truck came down, and we all felt like we were being watched. That was one of the times that we all felt spooked. We stayed in this local hotel, and I remember the sound guy, who's not even into UFOs, he's like, dude, I'm spooked. He goes, I feel like we're being watched. I was like, I feel really spooked too. And Ricky Sorrells was totally spooked.
Right.
And anyway, so that was one time. And then there was another time that happened in a little spooked when I was in. I did an event at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. with Leslie Kane in 2007.
Okay.
We flew in 14 military and government officials from 7 countries, and they testified as the reality of the UFO phenomenon. Then I ended up making a 2-hour special called I Know What I Saw for the History Channel. And during that presentation, there were guys in dark suits. The ballroom at the National Press Club. It's one of the bigger rooms. And there's a balcony up top. All the activity is going on down below. I barely even knew that there was a balcony up there. Very narrow. There's a balcony up there. And there were military guys that I had brought in, generals and stuff. And they were like, you see those guys up there, right? And I look and there are men in suits, dark suits, all sitting up there looking down. And I was like, oh, that's a little spooky.
Yeah.
Like, what agencies are those guys from, you know? And so I just felt just like, you know, just a little weird. And then you get like cases where people are spooked. I mean, I was spooked when I was shooting in Virginia.
Yeah.
Last time I was shooting in Virginia, the military base started calling all the people that we had either just met with or that we were about to meet with.
Yeah.
So it was like, who's quicker to get to the witnesses, right?
Right.
The base would call the witnesses and they'd say, this is as a military base in Brazil. This just happened. They'd call the witness and say, hey, so-and-so. Hey, how you doing? Are you still living at this address?
Shit.
Oh, good, good. How's the family doing? Oh, good, good, good. Yeah. Hey, there's an American filmmaker poking around asking questions and stuff. They reach out to you by any chance?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. All right, good. Well, glad the family's good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that kind of shit.
That's so, okay. So this, and I
so they were hip to me.
I'm sorry for getting a little dark here for just one second.
Yes.
You know, take a look at, oh my God, Snowden.
Yeah.
Assange.
Yeah.
To me, you know, what they did pushed forward the idea of truth, that we can handle the truth, we deserve the truth. Maybe the methods they used, you could question them, but maybe more in Assange than Snowden. I feel like...
And what about Gary McKinnon?
Which one's McKinnon?
Gary McKinnon is the biggest computer hack in history trying to find out the truth on UFOs.
McKinnon.
He's in my movie.
Okay. Wow.
Phenomenal.
Really?
Phenomenal.
Wow. You got it. Okay. But to finish my point...
They almost locked him up for life.
I know.
For trying to steal the truth.
Well, each of these people... What I find interesting about, I don't know as much about McKinnon as these two, is that in their like ability to get secret information, to read it, they got an idea of who they're up against, what these people are like behind closed doors. And yet, it seems like they underestimated the reality of realities, which is these people will not just arrest you, they'll harass you. They'll expose. They'll try to expose. They'll use any method possible to.
I cover this in the program.
Okay, so this I just don't. You worry like you are exact. Like you are in a position. I know a few other people who research this phenomena, and I worry about them. It's like, man, don't you understand? Like, if these people really don't want you to know something, and you find that thing out, they'll do anything to erase that information or you or to ruin your life.
Yeah.
And don't you worry about that. And how do you protect yourself? I know it's great. You are a famous documentarian, very respected, but how do you ensure that you or your family are in, you know?
Yeah. No, those thoughts do come to mind. Not for the first, well, I don't know, maybe the first 15, 20 years, I wasn't really that concerned about it. And then a couple things happened and I was like kind of spooked a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, if I get my name out there, it'll be a little better. Now, if I had that definitive proof, like I've been going after this video evidence from Virginia, Brazil. I've been going after photographic evidence. That's an ongoing effort. I've been sifting through messages, 500-plus messages, maybe even more, and trying to follow up every possible lead. I've got 11 really solid leads. Now, I thought about, okay, so I go back to Brazil. I get the video. Now I'm a target.
Yeah.
Now I definitely have something to worry about. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
They're threatening people that just saw something.
Right.
Now, imagine if you saw something and you had tangible evidence.
Right.
That's going to be a problem, right?
Right.
So I've thought about it, and that worries me a little bit. So I thought maybe the next time I go to Brazil, maybe I should have a little security. Just, yeah, maybe one person. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just a little concerned. You know what I mean? And, but now, again, what definitely is on my radar is that you have that definitive piece of evidence that they've so desperately tried to obfuscate, disappear, destroy, collect.
Yeah.
I'll give you a good example. There's a really good photograph featured in the program. If you don't know Providence, you could think, oh, maybe this is AI generated or whatever, but it's from 1990 in Calvine, Scotland. And I'd heard about it through an investigator who was was working at the MOD in the 90s on the UFO desk. His name is Nick Pope. And I was interviewing him while he was still at the MOD for a number of my documentaries. And I would always ask him, hey, you investigated UFOs? You know, what was the best case?
Yeah.
And just, boom, he'd go, oh, man, these two guys were hiking out in the wilderness out in a place called, you know what? He didn't say Calvin because I don't think he wanted me to know that. But he said in Scotland,
yeah.
Two guys, broad daylight, had a camera. It was either 5 or 6 photographs of the most amazing diamond-shaped, disc-shaped object, broad daylight, points of reference, with a military jet flying around.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, what happened to that picture? And he's like, oh, man, they covered that up and da-da-da-da. But I never really had quite – obviously, I didn't have the picture. I'd heard about it for over 20 years, and I was quietly following the case and going after it, following up with Nick, like, come on, there must be people at the MOD. They wouldn't have just thrown this picture away. And so anyway, a guy named David Clark – really stuck his teeth into this case, and he started sifting through FOIA requests or Freedom of Information Act, I guess the equivalent in England, where they release redacted documents.
Right.
And one of the redacted documents he got just a couple of years ago said, you know, I was talking about the case, and it said, so-and-so from the Royal Air Force Press Department, PR Department, and then blank, right? His name was redacted. So he just looked up 1990 press and then got a hold of this guy, Craig Lindsay, who was part of the public press or whatever from 1990 PR for the Royal Air Force, Craig Lindsay. And turns out Craig Lindsay had kept a print. So now I did an on-camera interview with him. I did an on-camera interview with the researchers. And then probably about a week, I had a week of production left on the program. This guy surfaces, who was there. He was friends with the people that took the picture.
Wow. Okay?
And the relevance of this will come clear in a second. Okay. So his name is Richard Greaves. And Richard Greaves gave a print interview, but not ever an on-camera or an audio interview. And he promised me through David Clark that I can get an interview with him. And I didn't know. I was so desperately wanting to know, like, what happened to the photographers? What happened to the witnesses that – for all intents and purposes, they wanted to publish this story. They went to the local newspaper. They had 6 prints. It was at least 6. Sorry, it was at least 5, possibly 6. And it was 35-millimeter film.
Wow. Okay?
2 witnesses, broad daylight, disc, UFO.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Then, finally, Richard Greaves gives me an interview. Bore you with the details, how long it took. I kept week after week. I was like, the film's done. Yeah. I know I'm not trying to pester you. I didn't want to push too hard because I pushed people too hard and they get frustrated and they just pull out and they're gone.
Right.
And I knew how important this interview was. So I just leaned on him just enough, you know, just lean. I would send him a text, hey, if you're still considering, now's the time, you know. So finally at like 10:30 at night or late at night, he calls me up. Whoa. And I'm on the East Coast and he's like, it's Richard Greaves. He's like, I've had a couple pints, I'm ready. He's Scottish, right?
Awesome.
Yeah. So he tells this crazy story about the guys that he worked with in the kitchen and what had happened.
Yeah.
And then he starts telling me about this car that shows up at night at the hotel when they were working. They were on a cigarette break. And I was like, so they told you this? He goes, no, I was there. I was like, you were there when a car pulled up at night on a cigarette break? He goes, yeah. And these men, he goes, they were fucking spooks. They were men in black. And they came up in his description of the whole case. Phenomenal. I mean, it's one of the most memorable scenes in the whole movie. My point is this. If that's true, If what he's saying is true and he's willing to take a polygraph test, that it is. He swears on his great grandchildren's life.
It's true.
Yes, I knew them. I worked with them in the kitchen. I made poached eggs. They made toast. I swear to God. So anyway, Men in Black came up, took the witnesses who took the photographs, pulled them aside. They came back in 10 minutes later. They came back inside. He goes, they were white as a fucking ghost. And they ended up drinking heavily, quit their jobs, and they disappeared for 34 years, and they're gone.
Wow.
So the prints are gone. The witnesses are gone. And we put out a statement in the film, you know, if anyone has any information on that, to get in touch with us. So we have a friend that worked with them in the kitchen. We have the photograph. We have the former press officer for the Royal Air Force, Craig Lindsay, who interviewed the witnesses and talks about what they described seeing and taking the pictures of and their intention. And then we have the guy at the MOD who talks about the fact they just wanted to kill the story because it didn't fit the party line that nothing of any defense interest is related or national security to UFOs.
Wow.
When you've got a crystal clear, broad daylight, five prints of a disc of an object that's inexplicable, that's hovering, and then you have a military jet going around it, they wanted to kill that story, and they did.
Okay, this leads me to the next question. Forgive me in advance,
yes.
Just point blank. Is there anything that you know that you can't talk about?
Yes.
Wow. And why?
I even said to...
Why can't you?
Well, So I said to the individuals that gave me this information, and they're definitely in a position to know, couldn't I just say that I heard it? Nope. Mm-mm. No, you can't say that. I was like, I can't say I just heard it. Nope. I read it. No. Yep.
So how does that feel?
Well, because, first of all, if I did say it, that would be it. My trust would be over, right? I would no longer, I have to respect those contacts and I have to respect their concern for violating whatever.
Right.
And so, is my life better for knowing it?
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Yes and no, because I'm really curious, and I've been on this mission for a long time.
Yeah.
So I feel like, gosh, I'd like to have more proof. I kind of want to believe it. Do I believe it? I don't just believe it because these individuals said it happened. I mean, it certainly, I want to believe it. I don't know how to process it.
Right.
I don't know, man.
Well, that's the thing. See, whatever.
It's hard to say. I don't if it's better that I know. I don't know.
I'm not going to try to dig it out of
you.
Yeah,
that
no, would be
I won't. I won't reveal
but
it.
I do,
I can't.
But I think what you just demonstrated is very similar to what a lot of people in Congress, when you see them get the top secret meetings, they come out having heard something.
Yeah.
And they can't say it either.
White is a fucking ghost.
White is a ghost. And that to me, that what, so people like me who are very interested, we can, you know, in a weird way, just with that bit of data and other bits of data just like it that you get, you see two main things. One, there really appears to be a behind-the-scenes war happening between people who do know this stuff. There seems to be a group of people who are like, fuck no, we don't talk about it. And another group of people who feel like we have a right to know. People have a right to know. And these two people seem to be in some terrible struggle right now. And that's where the whistleblowers come from. That's where the leaks come from. The other thing, though, that I
could say one thing.
Yes.
It involves photographic evidence.
Well, you know.
And the individuals that I spoke to had personally handled this material.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And it blew my fucking mind.
Yeah. And you can't say if you saw the photographs.
I did not see. I did not.
But it's but I hear this story, you know, and this is another thing that I wonder, and I wonder about myself too.
Yeah.
It's the slow drip disclosure theory.
Yeah. Disclosure and, with a small d.
And from other people who are in engaged in the sort of research you're engaged in, similar stories, which is I don't want to betray them.
Yeah.
They're giving me little bits and pieces.
My career would be over if I talked about it publicly.
Right.
Done. Nobody would ever talk to me again.
So, but the implication is they recognize your work.
Yes.
They trust you.
Yes.
And they want to use you, not in a bad way, but they want to use people like you to slow drip this information into default reality.
Yeah.
And then I have to ask, why a slow drip? Why the slow drip?
I don't think that, like, if it all came out at once, I think it'd be too much. Like, if you look at my progression over the years, right? When I first got started investigating the phenomenon, I thought my best friend Renee Harris had lost his mind. He was in a high school buddy of mine. We went across Europe together. We did all kinds of road trips, and he started talking about, like, out of the blue, he started talking about aliens and Roswell and UFOs, and I was like, this guy's lost his marbles. Like, I remember thinking, man, if I cut him loose, I'm going to lose one of my best friends.
Right, right.
And so that was my psyche, right? That was my reaction initially. And then I started delving into it, and it took me 15, maybe 20 years before I decided to report on close encounters of the third kind.
Right.
Then I went beyond that. Next time, now I'm going to report officially on a UFO crash. Relatively modern.
Right.
And now, suddenly, I'm finding myself reporting on an alleged crash retrieval program and an alleged close encounter of the third kind face-to-face in the desert with on-duty military officials, officers.
Yeah.
And that encounter is probably one of the most nuts, if true. I wouldn't have reported on it if I didn't think there was, like the individual said, I'll take a public lie detector test. I have the names of the other on-duty officers that were with me at the time. We have a location. We have a date. So I decided to leave it in there. But that encounter is nuts. Like when I first heard about it, I was like, and I remember I was with Christopher Mellon. We're having dinner in D.C., and Chris looks at me and he goes, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
I said, I don't know. What do you think? And he goes, the guy checks out. His background, he is who he says he is. He was where he says he was. You got that leaked video from 3 days prior. That's a craft. That's an unknown craft at the base.
Yeah.
That's leaked. He goes, I don't know. But he checks out. I was like, oh, so I dug a little deeper. I spent about a year digging around as much as I could with my limited access, and I opted to report on it because I figured, look, nothing's going to come of it if I don't report on it, and I'm going to receive some criticism in mainstream, but I always have anyway, so fair enough.
Well, yeah, of course you do. You have to. How are we doing on time? Okay, great.
We have 30 seconds.
No.
I'm kidding.
Okay. So let's...
I love sunsets, okay?
Let's jump into the present.
Yeah.
Based on all of your research,
yes,
give me an assessment of what's happening in New Jersey.
So a lot of times you can just say, you can quickly eliminate conventional by the the exhibited technology, right? So you have objects, a bona fide UAP, unidentified anomalous phenomena. exhibits a technology that doesn't make any sound or very little sound. Sometimes you'll get reports of a slight humming or a buzzing, but for the most part, no sound. No wings, no visible means of propulsion, has the ability to hover, loiter forever, yeah, for indefinitely, or accelerate from a standstill to out of sight in the blink of an eye, right angle turns at high speed, yeah, no sonic boom, no air disturbance, no wake. They also are transmedium. They go in the oceans. Yeah. They come in and out of the oceans, okay? That's a bona fide UAP, right?
Right.
Like, even after careful review of all the data, you still can't explain it.
Right.
Right? Now, what's happening over New Jersey, some of the reports, these objects are SUV-size drones.
Right.
And they're making noise.
Right.
Which is weird, because when I first heard that, I was thinking to myself, these things are making noise, but their loiter time is a long time.
Right.
And they go dark a lot of times when helicopters and stuff are trying to follow them.
Right.
And there's no infrared. I'm told they can't be picked up with infrared. There's an interference with other drones that people put in the air to try, yeah, to get closer.
They can't get their drones up.
Can't get their drones up. So if it is a conventional propulsion, it's highly advanced.
Yeah.
Not the type that a guy like me, because I fly drones. I fly drones for all my movies.
Yeah.
You know, I got, you know, for pro lever, pro consumer level.
What's the longest one of your
25
best?
Minutes. 25 minutes.
Yeah, 25 minutes.
And these
in
objects
the air
are big, but then I'm hearing other reports that I just saw yesterday of a Coast Guard being followed by, yep, objects that appear to have come out of the ocean.
Yeah.
So that's really weird. And these are officials that are saying this and police that are saying this. So there seems to be something truly inexplicable, right?
Yeah.
There's not an easy explanation. And I think it's one of the reasons why everyone is just like up in arms over it, because I can't, as someone who's investigated these for as much time as I have, I can't, because of all the external information I'm getting, the data that's coming in, I can't just give it a label like,
right,
this is highly advanced conventional propulsion, because there's other things demonstrated. And there's lots of them, and the loiter time is so long. And why can't why can't the government give us a straight answer? Now that's telltale right there.
Right.
The fact that they're hemming and hawing and,
yeah,
they're saying, oh, well, don't worry, we have no idea what it is, but you're perfectly safe. It's like,
right,
you know, something tells me that you have no idea what these things are.
Right.
And why are they not trying to, in a safe place, shoot one of them down?
Right.
Over the water? I don't know. It seems, especially the ones that are over military bases.
Well, that's the best video. You know, someone posted a video of a drone. Like, if they're saying, look, if this idea that the government won't shoot down drones, let me show you this video of a drone flying into Area 51. It's in there for like 4 minutes.
No way.
Shot out of the sky. So clearly we will shoot down drones. Like the fact that they're all like, oh, it's against the law, we can't shoot these things down. So it implies they know, clearly they know what they are. And probably it's our tech. Or if you want to go out there, it also could imply that this is the next drip. This is the next sort of...
If I wasn't so busy right now, I'd be there and investigating, boots on the ground. That's the way, right, to really find out about this stuff, right? I'd like to go to places. I've been flying drones now, let's see, since, 7-8 years. And I've had one drop out of the sky, just malfunction, freeze, explode on the desert floor. Excuse me. Battery was full, so it wasn't that. I was flying in a restricted, on the edge of a military base.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that they did something to the technology, just something to it, and it dropped out of the sky.
Sure.
Dropped out like a rock.
Right.
And I knew I wasn't supposed to be flying it, but there's a couple shots I wanted to get. And I wasn't really risking anyone. I shouldn't have been flying out there, and it said no drone flying, but I flew it anyway, and it dropped out of the sky like a rock. So I'm convinced. And everybody else that was with me, they somehow interfered with the technology and dropped it out of the sky.
Well, that's what people are saying is happening to their drones now.
Yeah.
So it would make sense. Of course we would, yeah, have some kind of tech that, like, knocks drones out of the sky. Of,
yeah,
course.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the...
I saw it happen.
No matter what, what's happening in New Jersey, wouldn't you say it's one of the more, like, gigantic events in this particular field, even if it is government tech?
But why would they do that?
Well, you know, the theories are that the fearmonger theory is they're scanning for radiation. They think there's a dirty bomb out there. They're scanning for a nuke. Again, this is just stuff, you know, popping.
Fear-mongering.
Fear-mongering. The other theory, and I'll send you this great TikTok of someone breaking it down. It's some time ago, they made an agreement that it would be okay for contractors to test experimental drones in the New Jersey
residential
corridor.
Air. Oh, come on. That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense because it's in airspace. And, you know, you're shutting airports down. It doesn't make any sense either. And also some of the videos, and again, who knows? Some of the videos, it's not just these drone things. It's orbs. It's the classic weird flickering orb. Mm. One of the videos seems to show the orb turning into one of these drones. Again, who the fuck knows what footage I'm looking at? I don't know. But that brings me to another question I had for you, which is the orb phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think that is? Because we have the Tic Tacs. We have the Virginia, I don't know, like the
cigar, yeah.
Which, by the way, is this, you know, that we talked about in an earlier podcast, Uma Muma, or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah. I love that name.
Cigar shaped.
Yeah, it was so funny, too, because the illustration they did for it made it look more like a rocky thing.
Yeah.
But then I was like, well, hang on a second. Artificial and it was solar, a solar wind solar thing.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been more, I don't know.
Who knows? But
it accelerated, right?
Didn't it accelerate when it shouldn't have? You know, it's the
I should have asked more questions to the Harvard psychiatrist. The Harvard.
Avi Loeb.
I just hung out with him.
He's so cool.
Yeah, I know. I was like, why didn't I ask him? We were so busy.
And he put his neck out there talking about that because he's like, this is exactly what it'd look like if a ship visited us. It does all the things. So, but the orb phenomena is interesting to me because it has a sort of spiritual component to it. Like there are people who claim that these things, they appear around them. I've met people who is it that teaches how to call those things? You know what I'm talking about? I can't believe I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter. But
he sees the orbs?
No, it's some method where you can call these things. Mm. And again, I know
they can be very small too, and they can be large too.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect for breakfast. Like buy a sausage burrito and add a sausage McMuffin for a dollar. Get more than you expect with new McValue at McDonald's.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
So have you seen one?
Yes, I did.
What are they? What do you think those are?
I don't talk about this very often. Very, very, very seldom. But when I was 20, maybe 10 o'clock at night, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And I was in Northern California in my bed with my girlfriend at the time, Lisa Reinhart. And neither one of us were into UFOs. I mean, not at all. Like, we never talked about UFOs. I mean, I'd heard some stories in the past from, like, family friends and stuff. But it was like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I had a queen-size bed. And then to the right of us, we were lying this way. It was a good size window.
Yeah.
Maybe 4x5. It was maybe a little bigger. It was big. Big window to our right. And we're both looking out the window and we see this like egg shaped thing that was like a yellowy white. And it was just like kind of pulsating a little bit.
Yeah.
Right out our window. It's like, what the? And she looks at me and she goes, what the is that? Yeah. And I said, I don't know whatever that thing is, but whatever it is, I get the feeling it knows we're looking at it. Mm-hmm. She goes, so do I. Close the blinds. I'm scared. So I leapt up out of bed, and I remember trying to close the blinds frantically, and I ripped them off the wall, and they hit the floor. And then I was picking them back up, and I was in my underwear, and I'm trying to put the damn blinds up. And we were, clutching each other for a couple of minutes.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it was kind of scary.
Yeah.
And she, after a couple of minutes, she goes, I wonder if it's still there. And so I peeked through the – it was gone. Then my sister, Janine, came home maybe like an hour later or something, and she's like, hey, what's going on? She came back from a concert, and she was telling us about her concert, and we were like, we just saw a UFO. And she goes, really? Like what? And we told her. And then we went to bed. She went to bed, woke up the next morning, never spoke of it ever again.
Yeah.
Didn't talk to anybody about it at all. And I was probably maybe 39, and I was doing I Know What I Saw. And I was visiting one of my really good friends down in San Diego, this guy John Kimmel. And he had this morning routine. He was like super fit. And I work out a little bit, but he just takes it to the next level. Like he was like, we're going to go jogging down the beach.
Yeah.
We're going to swim out to this buoy like a quarter mile offshore. You know, there's sharks in the water.
Fuck that.
Yeah, I know. And I was like swimming out this buoy feeling awfully vulnerable. We go out and then we swim back in again and he wants to run to the left. And I was like, you know, John, let's go to the right. He goes, the car is to the left and there's nothing to the right. And I was like, I want to go to the right. We got kind of an argument. I said, John, I'm going right.
Yeah.
He goes, there's nothing to the right. There's no food to the right. There's no car to the right. It's just a big, barren, empty beach. And I was like, well, I'm going. So he goes with me, reluctantly. And we walk down the beach, and there's three people sitting on this barren beach. Lisa Reinhart, her husband, and her daughter, who was probably like six at the time.
Yeah.
I looked at her, and I was like, Lisa?
Wow.
And she was like, James?
Weird.
I was like, oh, my God, this is my husband, and this is my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, my God, it's so good. I can't believe it. I gave her a big hug. And I looked at her, and I go, you remember that UFO sighting we had?
Yeah.
She goes, you're damn right I remember that. I said, what do you remember? And then she told me exactly like I did. And that was it. But had I not been with someone, I probably would have just written it off like it didn't really happen because I have no explanation for it.
Well, that
wasn't like
that's interesting. I'm sorry to cut you off, but yeah. See, that's interesting. That this is the way we react to things that far out of default reality.
Yeah,
you feel like it was a dream.
Who's going to believe you?
What
does it matter?
What
does it matter? Because I'm going to go around and sound like a crazy guy,
right?
You know, then it's going to be. Okay, well, I had this experience. Now people that maybe will look at my work and think, well, clearly he had this experience and that influences what he believes. That's not the case at all. Could it have somehow been an impetus that triggered me later in life? I don't know.
Listen, I'll share one with you real quick.
Okay.
And I don't talk.
But I have a witness. I have a witness. She's still around today to talk about
it. I have no
witness,
and I don't talk about this that much, and it seems like I would. I don't even know if I've talked about it on the podcast. But when I was a kid.
You're crazy. No, I'm kidding.
Yes. That's hilarious. Thank you for that. I knew it should have
been. This guy's lost his mind. I can't believe you work with this guy.
I make him. Based on everything you've said, it's such a boring story, but I do think I feel like telling it really quickly just because it.
I totally want to hear it.
I just realized, like, yeah, it's something I really hesitate to talk about. It's not a big deal, but when I was a kid, woke up in my window of my bedroom, was a fucking orb, just like this weird plasmatic hovering thing. Same sense of like, it's aware of me somehow.
Yeah.
And then I went to bed, woke up. And to this day, I think, was it a dream? But then when I see the footage of these things, it's like, that's what it fucking looked like. And so I am very curious. And I know where are we at time? Do I have time for one more question?
Yeah.
Okay. This is.
Did the orb look anything like your t-shirt?
It was not that cool.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
I could get lost in there.
Oh, man. This is
I am lost right now. You guys, look at them all.
Look at the flower of life.
we've lost him.
It's in there, man, right there.
That is so cool.
Thanks. Yes. Yeah. I can't believe people can do this with tie-dye.
It's unbelievable.
It's insane.
Beautiful.
So what do you... with all of these sightings that are happening, everything that's happening, and honestly, you know, with the New Jersey stuff in particular, I think for the first time, I started feeling creeped out. Like, I started getting not a good feeling. I started really playing around with the idea, like, that maybe we're being visited by something
more
advanced than us. And it wasn't a good feeling. You know, it wasn't a hippie feeling of they're coming to
save us
or anything. It was just like
from ourselves.
You know, and like if you look at the history of like what happens when we show up on shores, it doesn't end well for the people.
Godspeed, humans.
So do you have some sense, even if it's instinctive, intuitive, do you have some sense of what we might expect over the next few years?
So the reason why I'm not as spooked, because I've already kind of come to terms with the fact that there's a non-human intelligence present on this planet. And from all the cases I've investigated all around the world for decades, I've come to the conclusion that generally speaking, these objects are not hostile. This intelligence is not hostile. Now, some people would argue with me and say, hey, we have the abduction phenomenon and there's definitely something to that.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Well, I haven't delved into that. I've never really covered it. Yes, I've met people like
Stryver.
Oh, yeah. I know. And I
you're friends with him, right?
Yes. And I'm also. And hey, I believe that aspect of the phenomenon. And people constantly going, how come you haven't done any documentaries on? I'm like, that's a really slippery slope, and I'm already pushing the envelope so hard right now that I'm just not there yet.
Right.
However, I did talk to. Not Whitney Strieber. It was another, not John Mack. His name will come to me, Bud Hopkins. And Bud Hopkins was an amazing guy. He was friends with Leslie Kane, and I was hanging out at his apartment like in 2008, 2007, something like that. And he's like, James, I got this stuff I want to show you. It's just incredible, like this. And little did I realize that was the last time I was ever going to meet him. He died of cancer. Mm. But he goes, look at these illustrations I have. I'm having my patients, they're all from all around the world and none of them know each other, and I've been having them like draw what they see when they wake up on the ship, so-called ship.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, if that drawing wasn't the same like symbols and stuff they're seeing, they're reporting on the crowd, how the hell do you do that? If that's not compelling evidence, I don't know what is.
Right.
You've got 50 different people all drawing variations of the same thing, but it's the same damn thing.
Right.
And you're looking at it, he goes, none of these people know each other. These are in different countries. These are in different, and they're drawing the same thing they're seeing on the ship. That to me is, whoa, that's the most compelling I've ever seen for allegations people claim to being abducted or not, you know? So people could say to me, oh, James, you know, you're being naive and you're saying that it's a fairly benign presence for the most part. But I still do believe that. I do believe that their intention was to destroy us. I mean, they disabled our nuclear weapons.
Right.
They've done it countless times.
Right.
And I talked to a launch control officer, Robert Salas.
Yeah.
Love you, buddy. The guy's amazing. And he's like, you know, James, it's funny actually, because when I met him, I realized why he was a launch control officer, because he's so calm.
Yeah.
And he's so measured and nothing like, you know, ruffles his feathers.
Right.
He's just like a little Buddha, because that's the kind of guy you'd want if you want to flip the switch for nuclear war, right?
Yeah,
you
right.
want calm, measured, mellow.
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 Relax.
Relax. Yeah. And he goes, well, James, because about talking about UFOs, flipping, turning all these weapons off, turning these nuclear tip warheads from Minuteman missiles off, or whatever. And he goes, the way I saw it, the message was rather clear. It's like taking matches out of the hands of a baby. Really? Wow.
Wow. Wow. Whose baby?
Little babies playing with nuclear weapons, you know? It's like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
Get your hands off the nuclear weapons.
Yes, yes.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It was a joy talking to you. And I am so excited to watch your newest documentary.
Thank you so much.
Out. Today?
Yes, yes. Let me just quickly say, there have been some issues. It's the most independent release in the history of my 30-year career.
Right.
Because I've had nightmare issues with distribution companies. I won't bore your audience with the details of it, but this is the most independent release ever. It's $20 right now on Apple, Amazon, Vimeo, iTunes. That's expensive.
If you can afford to get it, buy it. If you can't, wait 2 weeks, it'll be available to rent. But it's 100% independent release. And if you like what I do and you can afford to support it, go for it.
Where's the best way? What's best for you for them to find it?
Amazon, iTunes, Vimeo,
okay.
Fandango. And I listed a bunch of things on my X account. So you can find me at James C. Fox, at James C. Fox. And I've been posting updates and
cool.
All the various links. We had a couple of issues earlier today. I think it's been ironed out, so... Great to have me on. Thank you so much. I really
appreciate
it.
Great meeting you. Yeah, thank you for your work. Everybody, watch his show. All the links will be in the comments section in the description for this podcast. You're the best. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was James Fox, everybody. Make sure you watch the program. Buy it in advance. He's spent his own money on this thing. I'm sure it's not easy getting people to fund this kind of documentary, and we need people like him on the front lines. Big thank you to our wonderful sponsors, and thank you for watching. Merry Christmas.